Hey, and welcome to the Anything But Quiet Time podcast, where I'm dressed like your favorite 80s icon.
Wow, you just need some aviators.
This is so insider, but we were supposed to like dress up, you know, like at school when the principal was trying to get team spirit going. That's happening at our job.
I need to confess. We actually were all in on this prank on you. Nobody dressed like the 80s except for Rochelle.
Well, the joke's on you because I love dressing up.
Hey, weekly, we get to come and however we choose to dress, come as you are. And that's very nice. That's very nice. We obviously talk about our quiet time, what we're going through spiritually and biblically. And you know, this week is very special. We'll have a special guest that we talk to here in just a second with Riley Clemens. But the idea of a quiet time, time with God, looking personalized like your own, mm-hmm. I think is important to some degree. I think it can't necessarily be, hey, my time with God is eating Doritos and watching my favorite sitcom. That's probably not, it can't just look like anything you want it to be.
Even though God would tell us, invite me wherever you go.
Yes. So, but is that undistracted, unhurried time with God?
I don't know if that, like the word devotional is right. There for a reason, yes. I think, because you are devoting time.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Not to Doritos.
Now at the same time, I think where I grew up was, it seemed like you had to do it a certain way.
Yeah, yeah.
And my youth minister, God bless him, I had a couple of them over the years. He would say this, and it makes sense to some degree, that if you don't do your quiet time in the morning, isn't that like putting on your armor after the battle? Mm-hmm. And you know that sticks with you a little bit, but I finally got to a point in life, I mean, even probably after college, where I realized, yeah, mornings just don't work, all right? Yeah. It's just not going to work. And I understand what he's saying of maybe not reading it right before bed and then forgetting it all. But whether it's the middle of the day, whether it's 4 o'clock, I mean, if it is the morning, that's great too. I just think it has to be unhurried, uninterrupted time with God, and wherever that works for you is great.
I think check-ins are really great in the morning. A check-in may not be a full-fledged, I'm going to sit down and study God's word time.
Sure.
Yeah. But, you know, Jesus did check-ins all throughout the day.
Yeah.
And he spent that time. And there are some people, yes, who devote all the time in the morning. And then, you know, when they wake up the next day, they feel like they're preparing for the day. So, but, you know, the whole thing about putting your armor on, I kind of like the idea of that. But
right. Yeah.
It was also interesting. One year, a friend pointed out, the Bible never instructs us to take it off.
Yeah, that's true.
Like,
that's true.
Wouldn't you just sleep with it on?
Yeah, so, well, and probably not literally, but you're right. We just need to build on those things.
We do. Yeah. And I think well-intentioned people say things and we get it locked and loaded in our brain. It has to look a certain way. And the freedom that comes in knowing Jesus means that it doesn't necessarily have to be about regulations anymore, right? We saw that with the law of Moses and nobody could stick with all of those laws and be free of guilt. I mean, that's why we needed Jesus in the first place. And it wasn't meant to be that way anyway. It's about relationship with Jesus. And if I'm so worried about like walking on eggshells, if it looks a certain way, that sounds more like an abusive relationship. It has to look a certain way or he's going to get mad. And that's not what God wants. He loves you. He wants to talk with you. And so when we talked with Riley Clemens, she's going to talk about how she has really found journaling to be a blessing.
Yeah.
It was ironic when she started talking about it because I had just written down something like, journaling has become something special for me. But perhaps that's not for you.
Sure.
Journaling was never a thing. When I was in a therapy session with my counselor and I was going through horrible postpartum depression and things and anxiety, I had my baby on my lap and my therapist asks, do you journal? And my immediate knee-jerk response was, no, isn't that awful? And he just quickly said, no, it just means that you've chosen to prioritize something else.
Yeah.
And that's okay. He gave me permission for it to be okay.
Sure, yeah.
So what does your quiet time look like?
I love that she gets into that.
Yeah.
As well as making her faith her own. even that transition a little bit from, what's that?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say it kind of transitions for what we were just talking about, making it your own.
Right, right. But then it even transitioning to the, she grew up in the church. Mm. How does that look now with a lot of people that grew up in the church saying, man, I don't really want anything to do with this anymore. And just her thoughts on that. Mm. It was a really great conversation we got to have with Riley Clemens, and hope you enjoy.
If you really feel low one day and want to go there.
Oh, man. I've had some moments where it was, whoa, what a way to start.
Well, we'll go ahead and start. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Oh, we said, feel like another woman is being catty or diva.
Oh, okay.
But we're not going to do that.
Listen, okay. I've had my catty moments, it's mostly around my sister and my mother. And then they're like, hey,
No.
We don't do that. And then I call them out on their catty moments. Yeah. It's just what you do.
That's right.
You know, if we could just like do it real subtle and like have a catchphrase for like Proverbs 31, like, I don't know, P31, like just P31.
If I said that to you when you're being angry at me, it would tick you off.
No. You're not allowed.
Men are not allowed.
I don't think anybody's allowed. If you're being mad.
If it's your mom or your sister.
That's worse right?
No, I think that's kind of our system, is like to hold each other to a standard of kindness and P31.
P31.
We really do try to call each other out when my sister is great about being like, now Riley, maybe you're being a little bit
because
dramatic,
you know, it's coming from a loving place.
Yeah, she just wants me to not.
Yes.
We all want each other to be the best version of ourselves, which is the value in community, right? You have people that are helping to hold you accountable.
Agree.
I was going to say, do you find that, like, so that means probably you don't receive it that way from just anybody. It would have to be somebody that you're invested in and invested in you.
Yeah. Well, as a perfectionist, people pleaser, I will say that one of the things that I've had to overcome is when people do, you know, whether it's coming from a loving place or not, receiving constructive criticism has always been something that I was the kid in school that when it was, that's not right, I wouldn't do it that way, it would tear me up. Mm-hmm. It would tear me up inside. I felt like a failure. And as an adult, it's crazy to see how some of those things still carry over.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And anytime it's like, I don't think I would do it like that, I'm like, oh, why?
Right.
I'm sorry. Yeah. It's anyway.
Well, so what is something that you've discovered that has helped you at least grow a little bit in that area? You may not be there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if you can learn that, I think when you're younger too, and even sharing that with young girls, that's so huge. That's such a big thing we deal with as women.
Yeah, it is.
Is the pleasing aspect.
I think I've gotten to a place where I generally take things less personally. You know, I think that I'm a highly sensitive person. Girl, I really am. I think when people have constructive criticism or things to say, or even in a work setting of, hey, this part in your set, I would tweak that. I didn't think that landed as well.
Yeah.
When in the past, maybe it would have been like, it's not good enough. I failed. I'm able to view it as, it's not a personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, making small changes. It's people wanting to help you be the best version of yourself or have the best show or whatever it is. And so I think that it has changed a bit that, you know, instead of viewing everything as a personal attack on
criticism. Here's some, a friend of ours said feedback this morning. That was a great word for it.
Yeah, feedback's great. Notes.
Feedback.
Notes, no. All feedback.
I see,
notes,
I like the quote of when I said constructive criticism, I meant you can compliment me. That's what I meant. And no,
I meant tell me how wonderful I am.
What do you mean?
Constructive criticism.
So how do you handle when it is a little bit of a, maybe online? I know social media you're kind of back and forth with, but I'm sure there are comments of whether it's songs or sounds or the concert or the experience or whatever, and you've had pushback at times that may not be coming from a loving place. This is just a stranger online, so how do you deal with that?
Most of the time, it's not coming from a loving place, I dare say.
Right.
I mean, I've grown up in the internet age, so I've never really known life without it, which is crazy to say.
Well, for people who have known life without it, perhaps— But what does it feel like to only know the internet at your fingertips? I guess you wouldn't have any other point of reference.
That's true.
So I don't know.
Oh, man. I have a ton of internet burnout right now. I think that I have a very special relationship with social media and the internet and try to put some pretty good boundaries in place. But obviously, I mean, the thing is, the internet has a lot of beautiful superpowers between connecting people. It's a way to hear stories from people who are listening to my music. And there are so many beautiful things. So I'm not here to dog the internet. I just also think that it can also be a really dangerous tool when it's not used properly. Like when you're, you know, reading a mean comment or something like that. And it kind of goes back to a philosophy I try to carry out. If you don't trust and know the person enough to take advice from them, perhaps you don't trust and know them enough to take criticism from them.
Mm. Yeah. Or to apply what they say.
Right.
To life.
Right. You know, it's one of those things where I think that if a random stranger walked up to you and said, that's dumb, I don't like that, change it, whatever. It's you know, how much power does that hold over you? Whereas your closest friend, somebody that you deeply trust, came up and love said it. I think it's just, it's a way that I process comments, that I process feedback in a healthier manner of being able to separate, is this somebody that I would trust to take advice from or ask advice from? And if it's not, then it's a little bit easier to be like, you know what? Then who am I to, why would I take their criticism as truth?
Yeah.
What's a valued source for you when it comes to having your quiet time?
Ooh, I take my mornings pretty seriously. My morning routine is my time. My first cup of coffee that my pastor at my church in Nashville, that's his thing. It's spend your first cup of coffee with the Lord. And I take that very seriously. It's been about 4 years of intentional journaling. I try to do a page a day, and I've gotten to a point where I'm very consistent, and it's been something that, to everybody listening to this, I'm looking at the mic like you're all right here. to everybody listening to this, journal, journal, journal. It's the best gift that you can give to yourself. Write down your prayers. You can look back and you can see the ones that God has answered. It's just such a wonderful tool. I love reading my journal entries from 3 years ago and seeing how I've changed and how I've grown and maybe things I'm still working on. And all, journaling is such a big... I could talk for a long time about journaling, but I take my morning seriously. Every morning I'm reading the word, and I got my good old Bible highlighters out. I ordered off of Amazon, and they're great, and they don't bleed through the pages, and it's not sponsored. I just really like them. And I do that, and then I journal and write down what's going on and write down my prayer requests, and that's my morning. That's my quiet time, and I stick to it on the road too, which is nice.
Thank you for sharing that. That's really good. That's great.
When somebody comes to a Riley Clemens show, what do you want them to take away? Obviously, you're singing about Jesus, but what's maybe one aspect that I want people to feel this way when they leave?
Oh, man. Well, the tour's been going really well. Thank you for asking. I just remember what you asked. It's been going really well. We've had a great time. I feel like this is my favorite tour I've ever done in a lot of ways. And just the set itself feels like it's connecting in a really amazing way. Mm-hmm. The whole experience, the way that I, along with my brilliant team, set up and design the live show and live experience is to really tell a story. It has those moments of energy and fun. Let's clap. Let's have a good time. Let's celebrate all of this stuff. But it also has moments that are hard to get through and painful, and not so much painful as they are acknowledging the hard parts of life. Mm-hmm. And acknowledging the difficult parts of having faith sometimes, because that's a reality that I think we all experience as believers. And so that being said, the goal of the show is, no matter if you're 8 or 80 years old, no matter if you walked in having the best day of your life, or if you were if you had a tough time getting out of bed that morning, the goal is to create a safe place to connect. Mm-hmm. I want every person in that room to feel a little bit less alone than they did when they walked in. Mm. And to ultimately walk out of that show after Zach plays, knowing that God's love for them is not conditional on how good they are. Thank God. Mm. Thank God we don't have to earn that. And I think that's a whole goal. I stand up on that stage, and I've struggled with imposter syndrome for many years now, because I get up there thinking, I am so broken and imperfect. I am a 24-year-old woman literally just waking up and trying my best every single day. And I am so grateful for God's grace and love. And I guess I want to remind people coming to the shows that we're all imperfect. Just because I get up on a stage and sing about Jesus doesn't mean that I'm perfect, which I know is understood, but I like to remind people of that.
You know, yeah. It made me think of Harvey and our experience. We had went through this hurricane. It was 2017, but for some, it was just like yesterday. And that was a commonality that we all had.
Yep.
And so it's almost like a weather. You're in an elevator, what are you going to talk about? Well, weather. So
you
bring up something super exciting like that, which can actually be.
Yeah.
But it's always usually a negative thing, and we can talk about it and, oh, yeah, empathize with that. Oh, yeah, I experienced that. We don't do that with our faith. Because we are concerned about what is this going to look like, whereas the hurricane stripped us bare and it's all just hanging out. And it is what it is because we're all kind of in this broken mess together.
Absolutely.
But if we did strip it down, what you're saying is that this concert, you are allowed to come to this place of this, we get it.
It's exact. That is so well said. It says in scripture, it's the sick that need the doctor. You know, Jesus, I mean, if we were completely well all the time, we wouldn't need the great physician. You know, I think our souls are ill. The nature of original sin, I mean, that's ingrained in us. Mm-hmm. And I think that as a Christian community, one of the most beneficial, enriching things that I've seen in my life is finding a community, sitting down and going, I am helplessly broken, it feels like, and really cutting to it. I think that that's a thing. Even with I reference my family all the time because they're literally my everything. I have the best family and I'm so grateful. But we get down to the nitty gritty. Our dinner tables are messy and full of our ups and downs and our pits and our peaks. And we talk about it and we air it out. And it's a really beautiful thing to be able to be vulnerable in that setting. And for years, especially starting in this industry so young, I felt such a need to portray this put together image of, I know I'm young, but I am wise and I got it together and I figured it out. And I feel like it's been really in the past year and a half, 2 years that God has placed on my heart, shed that. People don't need that.
Mm-mm. Sure. No. Well, your album came out last fall. It's Church Pew. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to assume that you grew up in church or faith.
I did.
I just assumed it from the album.
Right.
A lot of great songs
on
it.
On a church pew.
And so.
Because otherwise.
I was like, oh no, this is, what am I going to say now?
Yeah. Get you in trouble
They so sure do.
Where does that come into this experience, right? Because we see, not only do we see a lot of people leaving the faith you grew up with, but kind of that veneer that you were talking about, I think we can be raised that way and not think that I'm perfect, but think that subconsciously I'm better than other people or something.
Like, can I even just say that from the difference in generations. Mm-hmm. There was a generation where that is a personal thing.
So keep that to yourself.
Oh, right.
Keep that to yourself.
You don't talk about politics and religion on the first date, right?
It got brought up in an article I was reading from some of the baby boom generation saying, everybody is so willing to just share everything now. We're not talking about that because you still need to have boundaries in place.
Right, of course, absolutely.
In safe spaces, maybe you can go there. Mm-hmm. But I do find that fascinating in reading that article. We all have a set way of thinking about things because we were raised in a different culture.
Right.
And
absolutely.
So, anyway.
That's so well said. This is such a great conversation. I'm really enjoying this. Just thought I'd add that. I'm having a great time. I'm having a lot of fun.
Can we timestamp that part for Carson?
Yeah. Thank you so much. Just make it your ringtone.
I'll Bluetooth it to her later.
Whatever you need. Yeah. My brother used to do that. I had a wireless speaker in my room, and he thought it was so funny when I'd have sleepovers and whatever. He would always play the scary movie songs in the middle of the night. That's what that made me think of.
That's pretty awesome. Wow. That's well done. Well done to your brother.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, what does your experience growing up in church? Mm-hmm. How has that even maybe shifted a little bit your perspective of where you're at now?
It's good. You know, I think that growing up in the church, growing up around parents who were people of faith and in a community that knew Jesus and loved Jesus, it's a really great privilege. And I don't take it for granted. All my life, I've known who Jesus was. And thank God, I grew up in a community, in a family where Jesus was always something that I wanted. You know, of course, I've gone through years where, I mean, early teen years, those were really challenging. Of you naturally, as you are coming into your own, you begin to ask yourself the questions, do I really believe this? Mm-hmm. Is this my parents' hand-me-down faith? And I think that that's looking at my journey through faith and through my relationship with Jesus. There was a pivotal moment in my early teen years where I had to decide that I did not want to just carry the hand-me-down faith of my family for the sake of just keeping tradition. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
It had to become something that was personal to me. It had to become something that I would stand by if all my family decided, never mind. Mm-hmm. And I had to get to that point. And I think that for specifically people who grow up in church and, you know, go on to become adults as we do, it's so important to be able to, it was important for me to be able to find a faith that was my own, to find a faith and a connection with Jesus that I cultivated.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember a tipping scale where this is why it became important to you?
I do. There was a moment that I look back on all the time. And I think, and it's pure, it was just a moment of desperation in my early teen years. I remember exactly where I was. I was sitting in the back of the car. My mom was driving and I was in the back left seat. I remember what side of the car I was sitting on. And I've, you know, like so many people, I've experienced pretty intense anxiety and OCD specifically for as long as I can remember. It started when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And I just remember sitting in the car feeling so overwhelmed with anxiety. I was probably 13 years old, just fully anxious. I felt it in my body and my bones, the anxiety. And I remember praying the most simple prayer of God, if you are real, it was one of those. God, if you are real, please, please give me peace that I don't understand. Because I came to a point where I had to say this. I said, I can't accomplish that in my own strength. I've tried. I can't get rid of the anxiety and I can't find this peace on my own. And so that was the moment. And I remember, it wasn't an instant thing, I will say, but it was a few days later. I remember being in the car as well and sitting there and being overwhelmed by a piece that I didn't understand, that didn't make sense in the situation. And I think it was that moment where it clicked to me that faith was bigger than the tradition of it all. Mm-hmm. You have your family traditions and you always do this time of year. And this is what it became more than that to me. It became deeply personal because something that had been the biggest burden in my life at the time was made lighter by the goodness of God. And I'll say honestly, I still really struggle with anxiety. I still really struggle with OCD. That's a part of my journey and I'm working on it. And it's still something I pray about. And I think that God is still helping me through that. I think that that's a big thing too that I'm passionate about in my faith and sharing Jesus with other people. Sometimes it's not the miraculous overnight, there it is. I think that the transforming of a heart that takes place slowly has been really powerful to see in my own life. And I love talking about it because I continue to see it.
That's so good.
Thank you for sharing.
That's so good.
That.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Oh, God.
This is fun. I'm so passionate. I feel like I'm shaking the table.
Well, no.
Right. My knee was like,
if the table doesn't shake, the rocks will cry out.